The central question in this case is, what's the federal interest in singling out same-sex couples and only same-sex couples, treating their marriages as invalid, and the promise of the equal protection guarantee in our Constitution?
For a long time, I had just thought that I couldn't possibly be a lesbian. But women were the only people who interested me.
The tape recorder should have caught some ghost of us. That tape recorder not merely played, but should have listened to us, and could instruct those after us.
Welcome to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. A hate group threatens the liberty of LGBT Liberians. Activists are attacked for gay speak in Yaoundé and St. Petersburg, and multiple U.S. marriage cases close in on DOMA. Those stories and a lot more this week, because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
And I'm Gary Shaw.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending April 7th, 2012. An anti-gay group in Liberia's capital city of Monrovia distributed flyers this week with what is being described as a hit list of people in the West African country who support LGBT rights. The flyers were signed by the Movement Against Gays in Liberia, or MOGL. We are convinced that the below-listed individuals are gays or supporters who don't mean well for our country, the flyers read. Therefore, we have agreed to go after them using all means in life. No individual members of MOGL signed the flyer, but 28-year-old Moses Taplev told the Associated Press that he was affiliated with the group and that its threats should be taken seriously. "We will get to them one by one," Taplev said. "They want to spoil our country." Asked what specific action might be taken against those on the list, he said they could include flogging and death. A relative of one of those targeted, who spoke on condition of anonymity for fear of reprisals, said the person on the list had already received threatening phone calls. President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, last year's Nobel Peace Prize winner, has vowed to preserve Liberia's law criminalizing voluntary sodomy, which is a misdemeanor punishable by up to a year in prison. "We've got certain traditional values in our society that we would like to preserve," she said during an interview last month. "We're going to keep our traditional values." Two new bills were introduced in February in Liberia's parliament that would sharply increase penalties for private consensual adult same-gender sex. Human Rights Watch is calling on Sirleaf to proactively support fundamental rights for sexual minorities. LGBT Programs Director Graham Reed said that she cannot sit on the fence when there's this kind of provocation taking place. "Let these individuals be aware that we are coming after them soon," the threatening flyers warn. "We urge them to also begin saying their Lord's prayers."
Human Rights Watch is also condemning authorities in Cameroon's capital city of Yaoundé for shutting down a human rights workshop this week after it became apparent the discussion involved LGBT rights. Organizer Stefan Koch was arrested and released without charge 3 hours later. "Cameroonians have the right to freedom of assembly and expression," said Human Rights Watch's Boris Dietrich, "even if their viewpoints are not popular in the eyes of the authorities." Officials in the West Central African nation had issued a permit for the event, believing the discussion would focus on HIV/AIDS. When they discovered the focus was on sexual orientation, police were dispatched to break up the meeting. Representatives of the U.S. and German embassies were among the attendees. One event participant told Human Rights Watch that they said it was illegal to talk about homosexuality because homosexuality is illegal.
Meanwhile, two Russian gay activists were the first to be arrested in St. Petersburg this week under the city's recently enacted law criminalizing dissemination of LGBT propaganda to minors. Critics say the law will be used to ban pride events or other public demonstrations supporting LGBT rights. The two activists stood outside St. Petersburg's Palace of Youth Creativity, a major extracurricular activity center for young people, holding placards simply reading, "Gay, this is normal." They could each be sentenced to fines and up to 15 days in jail if they're convicted. The region's leading LGBT advocacy group, Coming Out, filed suit last week challenging the law's constitutionality. St. Petersburg joined a growing number of Russian municipalities to outlaw dissemination to minors of LGBT propaganda. A nationwide bill comparable to St. Petersburg's was introduced last week in the state Duma.
And the Malaysian government has banned television shows that feature gay characters. The country's Deputy Information, Communications and Culture Minister, Datuk Maglan Dennis de Cruz, said that the ban would begin immediately on state-owned TV and radio stations. A national censorship board will remove gay-related episodes of foreign productions already on the air and prevent local screenings of films with gay characters. A statement on the Facebook page of the Information Department said such characters go against the norm of a religious society because this encourages and promotes LGBT now. The edict will apparently expand later to include privately owned stations as well as satellite TV providers. The Malaysian government came under international fire last year when reports surfaced that effeminate boys were being sent to a so-called gay cure camp. But when asked if the broadcast directive applies to programs and TV shows hosted by men who appear effeminate, Maglan said no, because they are born this way.
In other news, Chilean lawmakers have finally passed a bill to ban discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity. The measure was first introduced 7 years ago, but only passed in the Senate last November. Right-wing religious and political opponents claimed that the bill would open the door to marriage rights for same-gender couples, even though the measure expressly forbids that. Its narrow 58-56 victory in Chile's House of Deputies came a week after the highly publicized death of 24-year-old Daniel Zumodio. The out gay man was tortured for at least an hour, had swastikas carved into his body, and was brutally beaten at a park in Santiago by a gang of alleged neo-Nazis. He died on March 28th after 3 weeks in a medically induced coma. Each of the four quickly captured defendants denies attacking Zumodio and denies being neo-Nazi. A final version of the anti-bias legislation reconciling differences in each of the two legislative chambers still needs to be approved. House of Deputies lawmakers observed a minute of silence in Zumodio's honor immediately before this week's vote.
The American Civil Liberties Union of Alaska is calling for a review of municipal elections results in Anchorage this week that included the overwhelming defeat of Proposition 5, a measure that would have banned anti-LGBT bias. With 94% of the votes counted, the measure was failing badly, 58-42%. The leading right-wing group opposed to the bias ban issued false information on its website that people could register and vote on the day of the election. Some precincts ran out of ballots, while others reported more votes than registered voters in the precinct. The Anchorage City Attorney's Office is conducting a formal investigation into the irregularities. But officials noted that none of the election contests were closely decided, so the outcome of the investigation will likely not affect any of the results.
The Mexican-American Legal Defense and Educational Fund, or MALDEF, has joined a growing movement urging President Barack Obama to sign an executive order requiring federal contractors to have LGBT-inclusive non-discrimination policies. In his letter to Obama this week, MALDEF President Thomas Sines wrote that, in recent years, multiple Congresses have failed to pass the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, ENDA, which would ban workplace bias based on actual or perceived sexual orientation or gender identity. MALDEF believes the time is now right to promote workplace fairness for LGBT individuals by taking strong executive action. 72 members of Congress sent a letter to Obama earlier this week, also calling on him to issue the directive, saying that it would extend important workplace protections to millions of Americans, while at the same time laying the groundwork for congressional passage of the Employment Non-Discrimination Act. A presidential order would only affect federal contractors, however.
Meanwhile, an unprecedented coalition of 23 of the largest LGBT rights organizations in the United States issued a joint open letter this week condemning the killing in Florida of an unarmed 17-year-old African-American teen, Trevon Martin, calling his death a national call to action and demanding that justice be served. Supporters of his accused killer, Neighborhood Watch volunteer George Zimmerman, claimed that he was defending himself against an attack by Martin and that the state's controversial Stand Your Ground law allows lethal force if the shooter believes it to be in self-defense. The nearly two dozen LGBT organizations signing on to the joint letter included the National Black Justice Coalition, the Human Rights Campaign, Immigration Equality, the National Center for Lesbian Rights, the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force, and parents, families, and friends of lesbians and gays. In the timeless words of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., the letter concludes, "Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere."
But finally, after its makers agreed to cut the number of F-words in their film from 6 to 3, the Motion Picture Association of America, or MPAA, agreed this week to change its rating of Bully from R to PG-13. The action lowers the age of those who can see the film in movie theaters from 17 to 13. Almost 500,000 people signed a change.org petition, started by bullied Michigan teen Katie Butler, urging the MPAA to change the rating so that younger viewers, Bully's target audience, could see the highly praised documentary. The PG-13 rating also allows the film to be screened in middle schools and high schools. The unrated version has been showing in Los Angeles and New York. The Weinstein Company, the film's distributor, plans on an April 13th release of the PG-13 version in 55 other U.S. cities. Directed by Lee Hirsch, Bully follows the lives of 5 kids over the course of a school year. A right-wing group has charged that the rating was lowered purely for profit. According to the Los Angeles Times, any film with more than 2 F-words typically gets an R rating. President Tim Winter of the Parents Television Council complained in a media statement that moving the yardstick from 1 F-bomb to 3 essentially removes the yardstick altogether. The group is now urging the MPAA to allow greater input from the public rather than just Hollywood power brokers.
That's News Wrap for the week ending April 7th, 2012. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap was written by Greg Gordon, recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles, and produced by Steve Pride.
News Wrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep This Way Out on the air at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
And I'm Gary Shaw.
We'll throw flowers in the street for a historic happy couple and pay tribute to a poet who made the world a richer place later in the program. Constitutional challenges to the Defense of Marriage Act reached a U.S. federal appeals court for the first time this week. The 1996 law known as DOMA bans recognition of same-gender unions and denies those couples more than 1,000 federal benefits in areas ranging from health care, children, and families to taxation, property, and inheritance rights. 3 judges from the Boston-based United States Court of Appeals for the First Circuit heard arguments from attorneys for the state of Massachusetts and a group of 7 legally married same-gender couples and 3 widowers. Plaintiffs urged the justices to uphold 2 lower court decisions from July 2010 that declared a key provision of DOMA to be a violation of the U.S. Constitution's Due Process Clause. Alice Olstein filed this report for Free Speech Radio News.
The First Circuit Court of Appeals in Boston heard 2 major cases at Wednesday's hearings. In the first, Gay and Lesbian Advocates and Defenders, or GLAAD, argued on behalf of several same-sex couples and widowers that the Defense of Marriage Act is discriminatory and unconstitutional.
What we're saying is that the Defense of Marriage Act is an across-the-board disrespect of the plaintiff's marriages.
That's Vicki Henry, a lawyer with GLAAD. She says the 1996 law banning federal recognition of same-sex marriage has led to many couples being unfairly denied Social Security benefits, child custody rights, and health care.
The central question in this case is, what's the federal interest in singling out same-sex couples and only same-sex couples and as treating their marriages as invalid? And the promise of the equal protection guarantee in our Constitution is that likes be treated alike. DOMA violates that promise.
Though the Obama administration told the Justice Department last year to stop defending DOMA, conservatives in the House of Representatives have taken over efforts to save the law. Led by House Speaker John Boehner, they hired Paul Clement, the same lawyer who argued against the president's health care reform last month, to argue for DOMA in cases around the country. Clement told the judges Wednesday that the intent of the law is not discrimination, but providing the best environment for children. But Camilla Taylor with the Lambda Legal Foundation disagrees.
These arguments don't make any legal sense because, of course, we know that thousands and thousands of same-sex couples are rearing children in their households across the nation. And we also know that the social science is uniform in saying that the children reared in these households do just as well and are just as healthy and well-adjusted as the children in houses of different-sex couples. So these arguments have no basis in science, and they are also directed towards shaming the children in these homes.
The American Academy of Pediatrics came out in support of legal recognition of same-sex parents in 2002. They said children benefit from the psychological stability of having both parents, whether biological or adoptive, sanctioned by the state. The appeals court also heard arguments from Massachusetts Attorney General Martha Coakley, who filed a separate case challenging DOMA as a violation of states' rights. After the hearing, Coakley told reporters she's confident the court will find DOMA's definition of marriage as a union between one man and one woman unconstitutional.
We think we'll be victorious here because not only is the law on our side in terms of what the law requires and what Congress's authority is or isn't here, but the facts and the fairness are on our side too. And it's about fairness. It's about what Massachusetts has already decided, I think, to good effect in Massachusetts, about families, about keeping kids safe, about giving kids opportunities.
Taylor says this ruling, along with others in California, Illinois, and other states, indicate that DOMA's days are numbered.
It's inevitable that DOMA will fall. It's clear from the number of cases around the country that have determined that DOMA is unconstitutional, that DOMA is not going to last very long.
But despite these challenges, DOMA will remain on the books until Congress appeals it or the U.S. Supreme Court strikes it down. Alice Olsen, FSRN, Washington.
The latest legal assault on DOMA was filed this week by the LGBT binational couples advocacy group Immigration Equality. They're representing five legally married couples in the U.S. District Court for the Eastern District of New York who are challenging DOMA's denial of gays and lesbians' right to sponsor foreign-born spouses for permanent residency, a right routinely granted to heterosexual couples. It's unlikely that the Department of Justice will defend DOMA in this lawsuit after concluding last year that the measure is unconstitutional and therefore indefensible. Consistent with that decision, the Obama administration has asked that full spousal health care benefits be given to a legally married lesbian federal employee who had sued to get them. A district judge ruled in February that DOMA violated the constitutional rights of Karen Golinsky and that she was entitled to coverage for her wife, Amy Cunningham. Tara Borelli, a Lambda legal lawyer representing Golinsky, told the Washington Post that the couple has been waiting for years for this equal treatment. Although the administration's decision applies only in their case, Borelli said that the courtroom battle would continue on all fronts until every same-gender couple gets equal treatment. House Speaker John Boehner rallied his Republican majority to pay top dollar to a high-profile private attorney to continue the government's defense of DOMA after the DOJ announced that it would no longer do so. Neither Boehner nor his lieutenants have said much about the issue since then, however, and their silence has not gone unnoticed by the religious right. The Family Research Council criticized the speaker for not being more aggressive in DOMA's defense, while a spokesman for the Southern Baptist Convention lamented the failure of the GOP to back a proposed constitutional amendment to define civil marriage as exclusively heterosexual.
Civil unions reach Mexico City. Coming up now on the Rainbow Minute. Although Mexico is one of the world's most Catholic countries, a new civil union law took effect in Mexico City on March 16, 2007. About 10 gay couples exchanged vows that historic day. Among them were journalist Antonio Medina and Jorge Serpa, a bank employee who had been together for over 4 years. In an open-air ceremony, the couple kissed and raised their hands in triumph as a crowd of cheering supporters waved rainbow flags. Then, a man wearing felt angel wings handed them flowers to the strains of a small orchestra. At one point, Medina addressed the crowd. "With this law," he said, "a history of exclusion comes to an end." Later, city lawmaker Victor Hugo Sirigo declared, "Love now has one less obstacle." The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns and recorded in the studios at WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, Mac Pence.
Hi, this is Janice Ian, and you're listening to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. Support your local public radio station. You ain't gonna get this nowhere else.
The Yale Young Poets Prize, the National Book Award, the Ruth Lilly Poetry Prize, the Los Angeles Times Book Award, the Dorothea Tanning Award, the National Book Critics Circle Award. She would have received the National Medal for the Arts, too, but she turned that one down in 1997. In a note to President Bill Clinton, she wrote that the radical disparities of wealth and power in America are widening at a devastating rate. A president cannot meaningfully honor certain token artists while the people at large are so dishonored. She was Adrienne Rich. Her recent passing is marked by This Way Out's Rick Watts in a tribute produced by Steve Pride and featuring excerpts from a Pacifica Radio Archives interview with Rich, conducted in 1983 by the noted feminist poet Eloise Klein Healy.
Some deaths knock the breath out of you. The earth stops spinning for a second, and you wonder how the world goes on without that person in it. Adrienne Rich was such a person, a poet distinguished by an unswerving progressive vision and empathic ferocity. She brought the oppression of women and lesbians to the forefront of poetic discourse and kept it there for nearly half a century. Adrienne Rich passed away 6 weeks shy of her 83rd birthday.
What kind of beast would turn its life into words? What atonement is this all about? And yet, writing words like these, I'm also living. Is all this close to the wolverine's howl signals, that modulated cantata of the wild? Or when away from you, I try to create you in words, am I simply using you like a river or a war? And how have I used rivers, how have I used wars, to escape writing of the worst thing of all? Not the crimes of others, not even our own death, but the failure to want our freedom passionately enough so that blighted elms, sick rivers, massacres would seem mere emblems of that desecration of ourselves. No one's fated or doomed to love anyone. The accidents happen. We're not heroines. They happen in our lives like car crashes, books that change us, neighborhoods we move into and come to love. Tristan und Isolde is scarcely the story. Women at least should know the difference between love and death. No poison cup, no penance. Merely a notion that the tape recorder should have caught some ghost of us. That tape recorder not merely played, but should have listened to us and could instruct those after us. This we were, this is how we tried to love, and these are the forces they had ranged against us, and these are the forces we had ranged within us and against us and within us.
That was 21 Love Poems, read by Adrienne Rich. The path-breaking feminist poet and essayist leaves behind 24 volumes of poetry, more than half a dozen of prose, a lifetime of activism, 3 sons, and her partner of 36 years, author Michelle Cliff.
Was it difficult for you to come out as a lesbian at the particular point in your life in which you did it?
Well, I guess I feel as if it's always happening over and over and over. I guess somebody, many people have said that it's a process, not an event. But at the time, I was walking around in such a state of exhilaration. I don't know that everyone has this experience, and I think a lot depends on the age at which you acknowledge yourself as a lesbian, that you acknowledge that you are in love with a woman madly, physically, passionately, erotically. And I was in my 40s, and I felt elated. For a long time, I had just thought that I couldn't possibly be a lesbian. I had been married, I had had these children, you know, all the things
all the
people
rules.
Say. And but women were the only people who interested me. they alone stirred my imagination, as Virginia Woolf said. And I guess for me it felt initially like this incredible gift. And I wasn't facing at that point the kind of situation that a lot of my friends have faced with, say, a child and a custody case and a jealous husband. I wasn't faced with having to make some kind of immediate sacrifice. And it was fueling my work incredibly. Mm-hmm. And yet, over and over and over again, I found myself feeling that I have to come out to people, and I'm particularly in public situations, because there are so many who don't want me to be this, who don't want it to be true of me, because when I came out, I already had a certain reputation.
You certainly did.
I was a sort of establishment poet.
Right.
And well-credentialed by the boys and mm-hmm. all of that. So that, I mean, I constantly feel I'm having to make this point, which is annoying and maddening. But I will make it as long as they want us to step back in the closet.
Now, another passage from 21 Love Poems, read by Adrian Rich.
The dark lintels, the blue and foreign stones of the great round rippled by stone implements, the midsummer nightlight rising from beneath the horizon. When I said a cleft of light, I meant this. And this is not Stonehenge simply, nor any place but the mind casting back to where her solitude, shared, could be chosen without loneliness, not easily nor without pains to stake out the circle, the heavy shadows, the great light. I choose to be a figure in that light, half blotted by darkness, something moving across that space, the color of stone greeting the moon, yet more than stone, a woman. I choose to walk here and to draw this circle.
Rich was one of the most lauded poets of our time, and triply marginalized herself as a woman, a lesbian, and a Jew. She consistently wielded her pen on behalf of the disenfranchised. She will be missed.
The paperback edition of Adrian Rich's final gift, Tonight No Poetry Will Serve, is set for release next month. Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. This week, Tanya Kane Perry, Gary Shaw, Judd Proctor, and Brian Burns with Mac Pence and Rick Watts contributed program material. Thanks also to Steve Pride, to Alice Olstein and Free Speech Radio News, and to the Pacifica Radio Archives. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out is made possible by a grant from the Yavanna Foundation and by the generosity of our listeners. Thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org to become a member of our family, listen to our podcasts, read the news, check out our blog, like our Facebook fan page, and a lot more. Follow TWO Radio on Twitter, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on WRNC Ashland, Wisconsin, KSKQ Ashland, Oregon, Planet FM, Auckland, New Zealand, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.